The moon brings the woman to the man, capisci?
The moon is a little like love.
Will you marry me?
I will marry you. I will be your wife.
You love him, Loretta?
No.
Good. When you love him, they drive you crazy.
Sometimes.
Why are you marrying Johnny? He's a fool.
It makes you act a little crazy.
Where are you taking me?
To the bed.
Oh, God. Okay, I don't care. Take me to the bed.
Isn't it romantic?
You got a love bite on your neck. Your life's going down the toilet.
You'll have your eyes open for you, my friend.
I have my eyes open.
I'll say no more.
You haven't said anything.
Que bella luna.
You ruined my life.
That's impossible. You ruined my life.
Look, it's Cosmo's moon.
Why do men chase women?
Nerves? I don't want to talk about it.
That moon. That crazy moon.
Now, you talk.
I love you.
What?
Snap out of it.
I'm confused.
They say there's nothing new under the sun.
Wait a minute.
But under the moon, that's another story.
Do you love him, Loretta?
Ma, I love him awful.
Oh, God, that's too bad.
Cher, Nicolas Cage, in a Norman Jewison film.
A la familia, eh?
A la familia.
Moonstruck.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
Good. It's been a while since we've got a Complete Works in.
Yeah. It's been probably a little over two months, or like about that time, almost.
Wow. I didn't even realize it was that long.
Yeah. We took some time off for the break, and so we can focus on Film Bookcast. But now, it's 2016. We have a little more time on our hands, because it's 2016.
Obviously. Yeah, of course.
Because 2015, we were just bustling around, being super busy all the time.
Slam-packed with the whole not having a job thing. And still got that going, so woo!
Yeah, so 2016 looks to have a little more free time.
Than 2015.
Yeah. Well, today, Mike and I are going to be discussing 1987's Moonstruck, which features Nicolas Cage as Ronnie Camerari. An IMDb plot synopsis reads, Loretta Castorini, a bookkeeper from Brooklyn, New York, finds herself in a difficult situation when she falls for the brother of the man she has agreed to marry.
Wow. Good job. Shout out to IMDb on that one.
Yeah, accurate stuff. With a bigger movie like Moonstruck, there's usually a pretty good plot synopsis, you know.
Yeah,
It's when it's a movie like The Boy in Blue, where it's like a one word plot synopsis, and like half of the word is not applicable to the movie that it's talking about.
I don't even remember what was the sailing. What was the word or rowing word? I don't even remember.
Sculling.
That's right. There we go.
Good old sculling.
Yeah.
Classic sport.
Yeah. Took the world by storm.
Yes. Back, I mean, you know, for a time. Moonstruck was directed by Norman Jewison and written by John Patrick Shanley. Jewison had already built a long career directing movies such as In the Heat of the Night, The Thomas Crown Affair, and Fiddler on the Roof. This was Shanley's first screenplay, as he was mostly known for his theater work at the time. But he would go on to write and direct movies like Joe vs. the Volcano and Doubt. Do you remember Doubt? That was nominated for a bunch of Oscars a couple years ago with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was his first screenplay.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah, that's something.
The more you know.
Yeah, so Moonstruck would prove to be a pretty big hit for Nicolas Cage's career. The movie was an enormous success, was nominated for several Oscars. You gave a huge look of surprise there.
That blows my mind.
But Cage was almost not in this movie. Interestingly, the studio was not impressed with the screen test, and they wanted to cast someone else in his role.
Really?
Yeah, but Cher, the star of the movie, threatened to quit the production unless Cage was cast. So Moonstruck made about $91 million on a budget of $15 million, and it was the fifth highest grossing film in 1987. The film won the Oscars for Best Original Screenplay, Best Actress for Cher, and Best Supporting Actress for Olympia Dukakis, and it was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Vincent Gardenia, Best Director, and Best Picture. Wow. So those are the Oscars that you, you know, were like, whoa, what?
Yeah, what? That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, Cage himself was nominated for Golden Globe for Best Actor. And this movie has persevered. And people really love this movie still to this day. Even at the Golden Globes this past Sunday, it was mentioned. Like, that, Lady Gaga mentioned it in her acceptance speech, like, as a thing that, like, influences her. Yeah, so, I mean, it's still, like, it's a movie that's still very much in popular culture today. I had never seen it before. I don't think you had either.
Yeah, no, I had never seen it.
Right. Well, I mean, the American Film Institute included the movie on several lists, named it the number 8 romantic comedy of all time, the number 17 greatest love story of all time, the number 41 comedy film of all time, which is on the same list as Raising Arizona, which makes two Nicolas Cage movies from 1987 that made it onto the same list.
Wow.
And the quote snap out of it was named the number 96 movie quote of all time from the American Film Institute.
Wow. Where did it go?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's still a very popular movie. It's still very critically, you know, appreciated. The movie stars Nicolas Cage as Ronnie Camerari, Cher as Loretta Castorini, Olympia Dukakis, Vincent Gardenia, Danny Aiello, Danny Aiello.
There you go.
Julie Bovasso, Louis Gus. there's all these Italian names I have no.
Yeah, you can do it.
John Mahoney, Theodore Chalipian Jr., and Anita Gillette.
Got it. All right.
The film was written by John Patrick Shanley as his debut screenplay and directed by Norman Jewison 2 years after Agnes of God and 2 years before In Country. So, Mike, with all that said, what were your overall thoughts on Moonstruck?
Wow. I did not realize it had such an... I mean, I knew it was a popular movie, but I didn't realize it had such critical acclaim. And I was just kind of, like, bored by it. Which makes me feel confused, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know. I did enjoy the dialogue. I mean, the movie, it's, you know, it's all people talking, obviously, but the, like, how kind of over the top and silly everything, and, like, it's kind of a soap opera, which makes sense with the underlying opera theme throughout the whole film.
Yeah, the soap opera crossed my mind too while I was watching it.
Yeah, like, just stuff like the, you know, Nicolas Cage flipping the table and then they immediately make out and he carries her to the bed. Like, what? Right. That doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah, but it has like a heightened theatricality to it that I think the movie's going for.
Yeah, and it's like the point. I did kind of love how everything is kind of cryptic and superstitious. Especially between the older generation, like the parents' family, right, and like that generation of the family. So it was pretty funny at times. Like, I found myself laughing and enjoying the scenes where that kind of stuff was happening, but kind of overall, I wasn't that invested, I guess.
Okay. I don't know. I came at this movie, neither of us had seen it. And, you know, I didn't love it. I didn't, like, go all in for it, but it might just not be my kind of movie.
Right.
I did enjoy it. And I thought, you know, I thought the family dynamics of it were, like, easily the best part of the movie, just seeing the family interact with each other, which is why, a lot of the movie, the family is, like, split up. You know, Cher's off,
right.
Cher's off doing her thing, Olympia Dukakis is doing her thing, and so on and so forth. And so the scenes when they're together, I think, are generally the best. And I think the climax, the, like, 10 to 15 minute sequence in the kitchen,
right,
at the end, is probably the best part of the movie, because you just have all of these really good actors inhabiting these characters, just kind of playing off of each other.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. That the moment when Danny Aiello comes home from Italy, from then to the end of the movie, I enjoyed that the most. That, like, that's right, like you said, that's when everyone's together finally.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I didn't not like it. I just wasn't invested, I guess. I don't know. I just, it wouldn't land in, you know, the number 8 romantic comedy of all time for me, I guess, or whatever number it was. But yeah, so that's my opinion, I guess.
Okay. All right. And that we're, I mean, so we were, obviously this podcast is about Nicolas Cage, and we're kind of placing this movie into the context of Nicolas Cage's career.
Right.
And one thing that kind of struck me about this is that, like Raising Arizona, it kind of, like, zeroes in on, like, a specific subset of people And just like amplifies their tendencies.
Yes, that's very much. Yeah. This is the very much like old school superstitious Italian.
Yeah, like the Italian American family of like 80s New York.
But yes. Like, yeah.
Like it's a very specific type of person that this movie is characterizing.
Right.
And I think it does a really good job. Like it nails it very well, I think, and it sells it very well. I think Cher is really good in the lead role as this character.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. I was like kind of confused for a little bit in the beginning. Like she's super old and she keeps talking of, well, not super old, but she's like, her hair is gray and stuff like that. And I think she says she's 37 or something at one point. and she keeps talking about, oh, my last husband died.
Right.
And I knew it was Nick Cage was the lead, you know, the romantic involvement. Yeah. And I thought we were going to have like a flashback to that husband. And you for
thought,
a while.
And you thought it was going to be Cage? Like
I thought Nick Cage was going to be the one who died. Because okay. I didn't know what the movie was about. but I thought that was really interesting dynamic to have that the, like, to have such a reliance on luck, like, for all these people and superstition right. and everything.
Yep.
So that was cool.
Yeah. When she's talking about her husband who died, it feels like there's very little emotional connection.
Yeah, no, he's just a guy.
Yeah, just like a person that was in her life and now she's not anymore.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of the characters in this movie are like that and are kind of just like kind of they seem very like realist to me, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
And it's weird because the movie is very earnest in like the message that it's trying to convey about love.
Right.
And so you have like this weird dichotomy of you know, love trying to win out over, like, the realist in all these people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. It's like, for a good portion of the movie, it's not sad, but, you know, everyone seems to kind of be with the person or married to somebody, like, just kind of 'cause.
Yeah. So
that seems like a lot of it's going on.
Yes.
Like, oh, you're old. You got to have a husband. And, you know. And you got to use his pinky ring as a ring, like all this weird stuff that like you just kind of go through the motions on.
Yeah, I mean, that's very apparent during the proposal scene at the beginning.
Yeah,
where Cher like literally walks Danny Aiello through the entire proposal process.
How to propose? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that stuff is pretty funny. Like, and it's funny too. The waiter is telling somebody like, "Oh yeah, he planned it all out. He's gonna give me the signal." When he's gonna do it, and then yet he doesn't know you're supposed like you should have a ring and like all this,
right.
all this stuff. but then in the end, it turns you know it's the number eight greatest romantic comedy or whatever number love story of all time. yet we still have all this stuff going on where it's kind of going through the motions about relationships.
Right.
So in the end, it pushes its message through that love will triumph over all this stuff. But it's an interesting way to get there, I guess.
Right. Yes. So, I mean, I did want to talk about the central scene, like, basically about halfway through the movie. It's after Cher and Nicolas Cage have hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
The giant moon that starts shining.
Right. Yeah.
And, like, everybody, like, basically stops what they're doing and just kind of look at this moon. Like, what did you think the moon, like, represented?
I don't know, Mike. That's too in-depth for what I was giving this movie credit for, I guess.
It seemed like to me that was a very important scene, like an important sequence. Like it kind of unified all of them. To me, I mean, I think the moon represented love.
Yeah, definitely that.
The movie's called Moonstruck.
Yeah, that's true.
If you replace the word moon with love.
Whoa, man. Which one of us has the English degree?
I just cracked but, this thing wide open.
This changes everything. but that scene is kind of when everyone shifts from the like going through the motions to being in love. You know, the couple that was arguing, the aunt and uncle, I think, that had been arguing. Their relationship's affirmed.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage and Cher come together. You know, and like everything shifts from superstition and luck to love after that.
Right. True.
Even the guy with the dogs.
Yeah.
The grandpa or whatever he is.
Yes. Yeah. He had a really good line at the end, actually, like right at the end after like everything that happens in the kitchen, like he starts crying after Cage proposes to her and like I think, I forget who asks him, like, oh, what's wrong? She's like, I'm confused. All right. I mean, what did you think of Nicolas Cage in this movie as this as being the complete works?
Yeah, I think it's it's another precursor to the Cage Insanity film. Like, there's his, right. It's another very over the top, you know, theatrical, like highly theatrical character.
Definitely, yeah.
And he does a great job at it. This is, you know, he's kind of flexing his muscles in his insanity that before he loses to it. but I thought it was kind of funny the just he fits this style of story, the, like, you know, he's got half a hand or whatever is going on, and he's like yelling about his loss and love.
Yeah, that first scene where, like, she's introduced to Cage, like they first meet at the bakery. Or wherever he works, the bakery. Like, he goes on this whole monologue about his, like, fiance who left him because he lost his hand because his brother had him look the other way while he was making something or something. And it's a really good scene. Like, he's thrown it all into that performance. And it's, like, very oddball. Like, it's very, like...
Yeah, it's very weird. And it's endearing, definitely. Like, it doesn't seem, like... It's not overacted to the point of comedy, but it is still funny.
Yeah, you know, it walks, like, a really tight line. And, like, right after it, like, they leave and, his employee, the girl, like, says something to the effect of, like, she's in love with him because he's damaged or...
Yeah, he's the most tormented man I've ever seen, and I love him, but I can never tell him because he can't love again since he lost his hand. Like, what? Yeah.
Like, and then she's never seen again.
Yeah, she's just gone. Like, I just love...
Like, she's like a throwaway character, yeah.
Yeah, during his monologue, he like, says to her, bring the knife, and she's like, no, I'm not gonna do it! As if she knows what he's gonna do, like, like he's done this before.
Which, like, I could totally believe.
Yeah, exactly. Would make sense. Yeah. He brings a great performance, but he isn't in a whole lot of the movie, I felt.
Yeah, I mean, he really only has, like, I guess you could say he has, like, four, like, big scenes, right?
Right.
He has, there's them first meeting, he has them, like, the morning after, there's the opera scene, and there's a kitchen scene, right?
And the kitchen scene, right.
The four, like, big stuff, and there's stuff here and there between that, but those are, like, the four, like, big scenes with him in it.
Yeah.
But he's really good in all of them. I think he brings, like, a really, like... Just, like, a different kind of energy than the rest of the movie has with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, almost...
He feels very, it's kind of what all of his roles are, like, just on the verge of being unhinged.
Yeah, just a little unhinged. It's, like, a very, like, animalistic quality.
He's a wolf.
In this, yeah. I don't know, it felt like, to me, especially when he first shows up and he's in the wife beater, it felt like he was channeling, like, Marlon Brando in A Streetcar Named Desire.
Yeah.
That was, like... That was what that reminded me of.
Right. Yeah, and he's still got the same haircut from Rumblefish.
Yeah, just still rocking it.
Yeah, the big flowy, weird mullet thing. But yeah, this is, I guess, the you know, kind of springboard into stardom for him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think he was a known quantity at this point. Like, people knew who he was.
Yeah.
But, like... Between this and Raising Arizona in 87, like, I feel like these two pretty big critical hits, and this was a huge commercial hit.
Right. That's what I mean. That this was nominated for so many Oscars, it made a huge profit. Everyone loves it.
Right. And I mean, yeah, and he was in movies before. Like, he was in Valley Girl, for example. So people, like, and that was a big hit.
Right.
So people did know him, but I think this movie, like, propelled his career way forward in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think we're going to see, like, the next few movies we're going to review are very, like, weird movies. but movies that, like, you wouldn't, like, they're not, like, mainstream kind of stuff. The next movie we're reviewing is Vampire's Kiss. To give you an idea.
Spoilers. Yes.
And then there's a movie called Never on Tuesday, in which Cage has a very small cameo role. And then there's an Italian movie called Time to Kill, which I don't think was ever released in the United States.
All right. So
I think it's, but I think it's interesting that he would use, like, you know, the career boost that he gets from Moonstruck,
right,
to do these, like, weird art and foreign movies. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if that was his first foray into not saying no ever.
I mean, that is something you'll see in about 2 years when we get to his output in the 2010s.
About 2 years. Oh, man. I wish he could stop making movies so we could ever finish this.
So we can finally catch up, but nope.
Yeah.
We've said it before, we'll say it again. For every movie we review, he's going to make two more.
Yep.
Like a yep. Hydra.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, I mean, I don't know. do you have anything else to say about Moonstruck, Mick?
Not particularly, no. That's why it's kind of striking or interesting to me, I guess, that this would be such a... I mean, it's a good movie. I could see it being a critical hit, but that it would receive, you know, put on all these lists from the AFI. It seems kind of just like a romantic comedy movie. Like, I mean,
I feel like it struck a chord in the 80s.
Yeah, that's also a good point,
like,
I guess.
Like, it hit upon those certain people. Cher was also, I mean, back then she was huge. Like, she was, like, a huge star.
Yeah.
Still is. I mean...
She's still a person.
She's still a person. She doesn't... I mean, she still makes stuff. She does music and stuff. I listen to it. I don't know how good it is. I only know her Twitter account, which is hilarious. I don't know if you've ever...
I've never seen that.
Oh, man. You should check out her Twitter account, because it is some next-level stuff.
Oh, man. I'm in.
It's basically, like... She's, like, 69 years old. She has no idea how Twitter works. But, like, rather than give it to her assistant, she's doing it herself.
She still does it. Yes.
So you can tell.
That's awesome.
But, yeah. Otherwise, I mean, I guess I just have one other question for you, Mike.
Sure. I know what it's going to be, too.
My question is this. Do you believe in life after love?
Oh, man. Yeah. I guess the answer to that is yes, Mike, I do.
Right, which is basically the thesis of Moonstruck.
It is. It is. I just remembered now. So there's the big, you know, climax scene in the kitchen. Everyone, Nicolas Cage proposes to Cher.
Right.
And everyone's, like, pouring champagne and all happy. And Danny Aiello is just, like, sitting on the radiator in the background, like, all sad. That got one of the biggest laughs for me from the movie.
Yeah. But then he gets included.
He does be brought into the
family. Because he's family. All right. Well, I guess that's Moonstruck. you know, we both did enjoy the movie. And, like,
yeah.
You know, I think I get why people like it as much as they do and why it was a big critical hit at the time. You know, I feel like it's for a different audience than for us, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely a good point.
But, you know, the important thing is it's a Nicolas Cage movie. And
now we've seen it.
Now we've seen it, so we can continue our journey through the career of Cage.
Yes.
So I guess, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my group and I stream our games at twitch.tv/geonerd79.
And you can find me at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, as well as all my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com and our other podcast, Filmbookcast, also at filmbook.com. And you can also find me on Letterboxd. Mike Smith Film is the name you can follow me at. So thank you guys for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriccio. If you're listening to this review of our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, top discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@film-book.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email. We do so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in 2 weeks. We will be discussing Nicolas Cage in one of his finest performances. The Complete Works is finally going to tackle Vampire's Kiss. I'm so excited to talk about Vampire's Kiss with you, Mike.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Really?
So I'm super pumped.
You've never seen Vampire? I saw it. I hadn't seen it for a long time because it's really hard to get a hold of.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a DVD of it or anything. Or if there is, it's very hard to find. Mm-hmm. But it was on Netflix Instant for like 2 days. Like
by accident.
Yeah, like somebody hit the wrong button or something. It was on Netflix Instant for like 2 days about like 4 or 5 years ago. And I remember I saw that it went up the instant that it did. And, you know, it's a movie that I had heard about for a long time. And my other friend, EJ, who was also a big Nicolas Cage fan, was also dying to see it. Mm-hmm. And so I saw that it was up and called him and was like, dude, come over to my room now. We got to watch Vampire's Kiss.
It's got to happen.
And it was a good thing I did because it disappeared from Netflix like the next day.
Wow.
Like literally a day or two after it had gone up.
Yeah.
So Vampire's Kiss, hard movie to find. But definitely worth watching if you haven't seen it, because it's pretty nuts. Yeah. I don't know whether to call it a good movie or a bad movie, but it's nuts.
Yeah, I guess you'll have to wait till next episode to find out what we say.
Yes, exactly. And you can check out this week's Film Bookcast, where Mike and I will be reviewing The Revenant, which just won the Golden Globe for Best Picture Drama.
How about that?
Yeah, so it's not... Golden Globes did not categorize this as a comedy or musical.
Yeah, which, no, they saved that for the hilarious The Martian.
Well, The Martian is pretty funny.
It is pretty funny, actually, now that I say that.
But, I mean... It's not a comedy.
No.
Which is why, I mean, Ricky Gervais made jokes about that all night. Like,
did he really?
Matt Damon, star of the hilarious comedy The Martian. But, I mean, like, The Martian is pretty hilarious at times. So those jokes kind of fell flat for me. Even though it shouldn't be declared a comedy.
Yeah.
Actually, I guess somebody asked Matt Damon, like, oh, wait, do you consider The Martian a comedy? And Matt Damon said, no, it's a musical.
What a troll.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. All right. So that's what we're going to do, The Revenant, and Empire's Kiss in 2 weeks.
See, now for Film Bookcast, we don't have to do a Golden Globe wrap-up.
Yeah, because we just
did one.
We just, we recapped Lady Gaga's acceptance speech.
Yep. It counts.
And we got this. So, yeah, there we go. All good. thank you guys so much for listening to The Complete Works. We are out. When love is clean, when boy meets girl, here's what they say. When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine.